where the fake goth girls were fake goths.
And fake girls.
I'm Liz Loxley, and my pronouns are they, them.
And I'm Mia Moore. My pronouns are also they, them.
You can talk with us on Twitter at fake goth girls or use the hashtag gothpod.
I clicked out of the tab. Okay. If you'd like to throw a coin our way or perhaps purchase our enamel pin or stickers, check out our Ko-fi at ko-fi.com/fakegothgirls.
Heck yeah. This week, I just have one bit of housekeeping, which is that a couple episodes, I said we're going to change a podcast format, and I was hoping by saying that, that the continuity would be enough to make me update it. No. As you could tell, just an update. It'll happen eventually, but not today. So congratulations on probably another episode that's an hour and a half. We are eventually going to cut this shit down. We'll see. Hey, Mia, what are you stoked about? Oh, yeah?
Oh, I actually, we have one thing I wanted to share also in this section, which is Lynn's Sminx at this underscore Sminx on Twitter shared, finally catching up with at fake goth girls, raised hand emoji. So happy to hear Exomia Moore and Liz Loxley podcasting again, smiley face. And it just made me happy. I've had some other like private comments about us coming back to podcasting, and it just feels good that, like, you know, we still got friends. They're still here. And and it's just nice to know people are out there listening. So thank you so much. And thank you for the kind words.
Hell yeah. All right. Hey, Mia, what are you stoked about this week?
I'm stoked about fall. It's finally cooling down a little bit here in Austin, Texas. Today, it was high of like 85, which I know that's summer for some people. But like in the morning, you get some of the sort of crisp fall air. It's like a little chilly. You're like, ooh. And, you know, it's not quite as sweaty all day. And then also, I just got back from Berlin, which has actual fall weather already, like 60s and 70s all day and a little cooler at night. And it was just so delightful to be somewhere that had an actual chill in the air and seasons happening. There were some leaves changing colors and things like that. And it just got me excited for being able to go outside a little bit more. And like, you know, fall is a good season. It's not my most favorite season, but it's my number two.
It has been such a hellish summer that the other day I went out with mom and it was just like, it's such a nice crisp day. It's like 88 degrees.
Okay, right? Like, what is up with my perspective being so terribly skewed? But it's true because like, so I had to work outside with Miles for a little bit today because he was barking nonstop, which is a whole other story. I was like, whatever, we're going outside. And I was like, oh, it's actually nice out here. And it was still like 85, which is like objectively hot.
It's embarrassing.
Yeah, I wasn't just sweating buckets. It was great. I asked Alexa, what's the weather this morning, when I was getting dressed to take my kid to daycare, and it was like, it's 65, and I was like, shorts weather, got it.
When the day that it was 88, because mom's like, oh, you know, it's hot, I don't want to go out anymore. And I was like, it's fall, it's autumn, it's crisp. What are you talking about? While in like a tank top, that's like a crop top and short shorts. And I'm like, yeah, it's so hot or so cold. It's wonderful. It's the big difference is you go outside and don't immediately become glistening with sweat. And you're like, delicious. I love it here. I love Texas so much. It's definitely not getting worse and worse by the minute.
Yeah, there's something about also having decided we're leaving that makes it worse and more intolerable, because our new favorite hobby is when the weather is bad, which is always, we open up the weather app and we look at what's the weather like in Washington State right now. And it's always fucking beautiful. Like, it's unfair.
Yeah, I was like, absurd. It's absurd. They just get to live like that? Okay.
Yeah, there's like, so in my team's daily stand-up on Slack, we have like a fun question every day. And one of the fun questions was, you know, would you rather live somewhere where it's always, I don't know, it's in Celsius, but basically like always super hot or always cold? And it was like, I think I already picked always super hot and I don't like it.
Yeah, born this way, baby.
Yeah. What are you stoked about this week?
I don't necessarily say stoked. I'm actually probably having a bit of a mental breakdown, but it is my birthday this week and I am a birthday bitch. So
happy birthday. It's Libra season.
I would say from maybe one of the most stereotypical Libras you may know.
It's true. Like, you are the baseline I judge other Libras by.
Sure. The other day, one of the people I went out to the Rammstein concert with was Aries. And I was like, you're my first one. You are now the Aries. Congratulations.
Okay, it's true. I don't know how real like astrology people actually do it, because I'm like, you're my archetype of what this is now. Enjoy that pressure. But I do think you are incredibly Libra. It's interesting. I follow someone, like an influencer, who it was her birthday this week, and she was gifted a cake from a friend that said like Libra baby. And I was like, I forget Libras are like one of the signs that cares about their sign. Like, I'm a Libra party, but yeah, I don't know. It's just funny to me. I don't know why.
I think it's because we get Halloween. I mean, like some Scorpios do too. Like Scorpios get literal Halloween, but we get like more of the season. So that's my logic. That's my reason.
Well, it's interesting because I definitely feel like there are signs that you never hear people be like, oh, I'm such a whatever, because like the Capricorn sign as a whole doesn't care. Yeah, Capricorn. Although I do now follow someone who is a Capricorn and talks about Capricorn shit, and I'm like, interesting. But I think for the, like, there's definitely signs that are more into astrology and some that are less. So yeah, like I don't know a lot of Cancers that are like, I'm such a Cancer.
But I do know a lot of Geminis, and you know what? I love all of them.
Oh, I think, what's the thing about like if a like men of the sign are like the least realized version, and women and non-binary people are like the all the positive things about it? Because I've dated multiple Geminis, and there was a time where I was like, I'm never dating a Gemini again. And like my partner is a Gemini, but he's more self-actualized, so I think it's fine. But I was like, yeah, all Geminis are bad. And then I started meeting like not men that were Geminis. I was like, actually, they're great.
Yeah, I love all my not men Geminis. I also love your husband, so I guess I love also men Geminis.
Yeah, but that's like the short list of like 10 men that you like. 10 is high.
I don't talk to a lot of men, so one of the ones I like is a Gemini. Therefore,
it's all
point.
Good.
All right, let's move on to the first date question, where I make an effort to learn more about each other. This week, the first date question will be asked by Mia.
Yeah, I was writing the notes, and it made me think I wanted to talk more about fall than I could just by saying I'm excited about fall. So my question is, oh, and also whatever, I'll follow it up after the end. My question is, what is something that's on your fall bucket list? And my follow up caveat is, I do not like calling it a bucket list, because bucket list is literally for when you're about to kick the bucket. And I think it's silly to use it for something that's not that serious. Like,
do
I want to bake pumpkin bread. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. I didn't know that. I don't run into that.
Well, so I almost said fall to-do list, but I feel like that ascribes more like pressure to it than I wanted. So I was like, I guess bucket list is the way. But if there's a better like term for that, let me know. Because I'm too literal for bucket list. It's like, oh, if I don't do this before I die, I'll have regrets. It's like, no, I just want to bake some pumpkin bread.
Oh, yeah. My brain goes the exact same way. This is why we're best friends. I'm just like, but I hope I don't die.
Like, so I guess like what's something you would like to do this fall? What's on your fall wish list?
Yeah, I know, my brain, that doesn't work either. There is definitely like the right word out there, but like for me, wish list becomes too literal of like, I guess not literal anywhere, but it's become so figurative in that it means like financial things.
Well, yeah, it's like a tangible thing, like a good, like a purchase.
Anyways, mine's really kind of sad, because like I've been thinking about it a lot, because I don't have anything to do for my birthday this year. Like, what do I want to do? The weather's nice. Like, I should do something. And literally the only thing I can, like, I thought about like, oh, maybe go to like a museum or like some stuff like that. But like none of that particularly interests me right now. And like none of them have like any particular like specific exhibitions that I'm interested in. So I'm just kind of like, I kind of just want to go to a restaurant, because I don't eat at restaurants anymore, because it's too hot to eat on a porch and I don't feel comfortable eating inside. So I'm like, oh, I could eat on a porch and have like fresh kitchen made food.
It is patio season for Texas, in that it's not 100 degrees outside.
Yeah.
Yeah, that has been my one thing I've missed the most during the pandemic, is that we're not eating inside either. And a lot of patios are just like, I don't know. Do other people not sweat as much as me? Like, why is everyone like, woo, let's get margs on the patio? Like, that's my nightmare. We got dinner when you were in town, and with another friend, and I was like, They have a breezeway, so it's fully shaded. Like, I know the whole situation with this outdoor seating, and that's the amount of attention I require.
Well, it's like also early summer, we went out to a porch to eat, and it was before it got hot in Texas, like super hot. But that particular porch had like, it has like plastic stuff around it to make sure like rain and stuff doesn't get in. But that just made it like basically a greenhouse.
Anyways, yeah, we've actually eaten there a couple of times, and every time I'm like, I'm just gonna sweat. It's fine. So yeah, that, well, hey, that's, that sounds fun to me. And like, also, you brought up the, there's no exhibits that you're interested in right now. And while we were in Berlin and I was working, Colby got to like go to some museums, and he's like, yeah, I went to the history museum, but like half of it, like a floor and a half was just like Egyptian stuff. And I was like, but I'm in Germany, which I thought was,
well, you know how we like to steal stuff from Africa and show it off as if it's ours.
No, he was literally like, give it back. Like, is this a, you know, because we talked about like, oh yeah, like King Tut's tomb or whatever is a traveling exhibit. Like, maybe this is a traveling exhibit. But he's like, it was a lot of the museum though. And I was like, I want more Berlin stuff and less Egyptian stuff.
Well, it's also weird if you like live in an area, you want stuff from outside. So it depends on who you're going.
That's true.
For.
Yeah, because like I've been to, there's a Texas History Museum here, and it is not got a lot of like revisit value once you've been once, except for the exhibits that they change out. Like when we went last, which was a while ago now, they had like a video game exhibit, which was cool. But like the other two floors are literally just Texas history, which if you grew up here, you had every other year for a while. Like you got taught about the Alamo like three times, like you're good. But yeah, I thought that was really funny.
Yeah, no, all like I've been to the science and nature museums too many times. I've been to the art museums too many times. I've just like, there's the only other thing I'm thinking is maybe zoo, so I can go see some birds. But
oh, I was gonna suggest, do y'all have like an arboretum or a wildflower center? Because that can be really fun when it's less hot.
We do. Eh. I've never been to it, but like, it's just never suit. Like, because near the zoo, actually, right across from the zoo, there is like a Japanese garden that like is a nice day out. In that area, and it's actually right down the street from like two art museums that I usually go to. Like, it's a really like, I might do a day in Fort Worth is what I'm saying, which if you guys aren't from Texas, Fort Worth is actually quite nice. It has its own whole vibe and has a lot of really good stuff to do on a nice day.
Yeah, I this is me mea culpaing for all the years I shit talked Fort Worth. I'm wrong. It's cool. Well, like the thing you hear about when you don't know about Fort Worth is like the stock. What is it?
Stockyards. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So cows. I don't care about cows. Yeah, if anything, I actually care about cows. I just don't want to see them used as meat and used as a commodity and all of that. I'm like, this is too country for me. But no, there's like a cool artsy vibe.
When I was actually for my 19th birthday, I think. So there are two museums right next to each other. One is a modern art museum and one is a more like classical art museum. The classical art museum is free and you can just look at it and tell it is a rich man's like tax write-off. But we went there because they had the Impressionist, was touring there at the time, and I love Impressionism. And so I went there, with one of my oldest best friends. And we had a day there and we like looked at like Van Gogh and stuff like that. And it was great because I love it. And it's so amazing in person. Like we got to see one of the water lilies in person. And I can't explain to you, like, you just don't see how beautiful they are. You cannot see how beautiful they are on paper. You just can't.
And yeah, it's like a reminder that it's a 3D work of art.
Yeah. And like, especially with Impressionism, the like depth of like the paint, it makes such a huge difference. And then we went over to the Modern Museum, which that one does cost money. It's pretty good. I've had a lot of good days there when they have a traveling exhibit. So at the time, they had Kara Walker, who, like, I don't know how to explain her artwork just real well, but I'll, like, put a link to Kara Walker. She's famous. If you know art people, you know her. But she was one of my favorite artists at the time, so she was the exhibit, which was cool as fuck. And then that day, they happened to be having an event where, like, you got to, like, paint alongside Warhols, and they had this, I believe the band's name is like Mukapaza. They're like kind of popular among like indie hipsters, but they're like basically like a band where they play like band music, like a high school band. And it was just like a fucking excellent day. And after leaving that, I was like, damn, I could never shit talk Fort Worth again. They just gave me like a fucking like day that I didn't even ask for.
That's a bucket list day.
Yeah, exactly. It's like one of my favorite days of my like life.
One time, it was the first time in Austin that I went to the feminist bookstore that we have here, which is called Bookwoman. And it's one of
the
few.
So Portlandia.
It really is, but it's also it also is like objectively very cool because they're not like turfy feminist situation. So like they're very LGBT inclusive, and they have like zines and a lot of stuff from local artists, and it's very cool. But the first time I ever went there with a friend, we just happened to come like right before they were doing a poetry reading with like the author of a book, and I was like, this is wild. It was very cool.
So it turns out sometimes leaving the house is worth it.
But that sounds fake. Yeah. I mean, maybe before there was a pandemic. My fall bucket list. So the biggest one is I always try to bake my grandma's pumpkin bread recipe every fall. I remember as a kid, she would always like bust it out whenever the first like chilly air hit, and she'd make it several times in a season. So I want to make that. So that's on my list. He made this for me because he's like this. He made me pumpkin spice syrup for my coffee because the Starbucks pumpkin spice latte and most pumpkin spice lattes are not able to be made vegan. So he makes me pumpkin spice syrup every year. God, I'm lucky. Sorry. This is obnoxious.
I can't believe you feel ashamed that your husband made you something. Like the fact that like the bar is so low that your husband made you something you enjoy, and you're like, I'm so sorry, everyone. My husband loves like a little bit enough to make me syrup.
Y'all, it's so cringe.
Embarrassing.
Being vulnerable on the internet. Anyway, it's a sweet thing he does for me. And so now we have like half a can of pumpkin left. So I'm going to try to downscale the recipe and see what happens. I also had to veganize the recipe, but that so far has not been a problem. And then I was thinking, like last year we took the baby to a pumpkin patch, and that was really fun. I mean, he didn't know what was going on, but we did. And, you know, I took pictures with him next to the pumpkins, and we picked out some pumpkins, and we had a good time. So I'll try to see if we can get that in there somewhere. And then I also want to go to the farmer's market, which, like, I know summer is, like, the best season for produce and stuff, but when it's 1,000 degrees, it feels nicer to go when it's, 900 degrees.
When I'm not going to die.
Truly, we used to go during the summer, and I do not know how we did it. I think
oh,
also,
it wasn't as bad then. It just straight up was global warming, baby.
I mean that, but I also think post-pregnancy, once I was pregnant, I was just really, really like I ran so hot because you literally have double the blood in your body and you're making a human. So you just run hotter. And I don't think I've recovered from that. I think I just am hot more often than I used to be, which is fun.
Yeah, and all the hormonal stuff too. Like, yeah, each and every year it gets more and more hard to tolerate weather.
We love to see it.
Let's die. All right. Speaking of, welcome to Bless This Mess, where we talk about the mess that is our personal lives. What's up, Mia?
I like that we both wrote gender things. Mine is about traveling to Berlin, traveling somewhere where you don't know people, and the pronouns conversation seems to not have hit yet, and being misgendered for a whole week. Nothing like being misgendered for a whole week to remind you that you're not actually faking your gender, because I constantly have thoughts about how I'm not queer enough, even though being queer is a huge part of like who I am and my identity and how I see the world. I'm still like, but I'm faking it. I just want to seem interesting, which is like, I don't think that's a thing that straight or cis people think. Which is like that being
it's
queer
what they
is inherently
tell us
interesting.
That we're doing.
Yeah. Well, I think like I always thought that queer people were cool, but it was like, oh, the envy I have is because I am that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think like other people are like, whoa, that's rad. But anyway, whatever. So that's been fun and weird, and I don't know. I'm a little tired. Today, the day that we're recording this, is National Coming Out Day. And I was like, oh, I should, you know, I know this is just a thing that is basically a social media holiday, right? Like the other day was like National Daughters Day. And I'm like, this one's new, right? Like we didn't talk about this last year, right?
you all made this up.
It really, I'm like, this was not one last year. And that's what National Coming Out Day.
Oh, there was like a fat one like last week or something. Like National Fat Acceptance Day. Something like that. And I was like, okay, this is, I think it was the 8th. But yeah, I was like, okay.
October is pretty busy, I feel like, with days. Yes. Because it's one of the few that doesn't have like a, it's not like Black History Month or something. Like it feels like there's not as much overlap with other things. So people are like, oh, I'll put my pronouns day is also in October.
Latin American History Month, actually.
Okay, well, oops, I didn't know that. And also, how dare you put everything during Latin American History Month?
That, and then like breast cancer awareness, which we all know is a fucking, we all should know that's a sham, right?
Well, like, there are real charities and then there's Susan G. Komen. Yeah. Also, making everything pink does not help with the gendered perception of breast cancer, but whatever. It's been interesting in my current job because our headquarters is obviously it's in Berlin, it's in Germany, and a lot of my coworkers are European. And almost all of them speak at least two languages, if not more, which already I'm like, it's me, stupid American. I know like Gesundheit, you know, I don't speak other languages. And then add in the pronouns thing and especially like a neutral pronoun, which is not a thing in every language. I don't speak German, but my understanding is that it is incredibly gendered in terms of how you like conjugate verbs. So like every verb is conjugated based on the gender of the subject when you're talking about like people or whatever. So that gets really hard because they don't have a neutral singular pronoun. So it's not even just like the way that people are in English about like, oh, you can't use they, them for a single person. It's like, oh, it literally doesn't exist. I don't know how you would do that. And it's catching on slowly, but only really in queer circles is my understanding. So like, yeah, knowing all that context, and I'm still learning more about it because I think it's fascinating to see how it is different in other places. And I also think it's different by industry because like I work in tech and tech is more progressive about like pronouns and gender and being trans and stuff like that than other industries. Cause like, I also know trans people that are like, I work service jobs, so I'm just misgendered all day long. And that's just part of it. And it's like, right. Like I have a certain amount of privilege being in tech. But this is also the first time I've had like an in-person interaction with people where I had my current pronouns. I wasn't using she, her. And it just felt bad to be she, her constantly and not really know how to address it because I don't like addressing it with like Native American English speakers on a regular day. And I especially don't like doing it when I'm like, well, you're already doing way more than me in this situation terms of like speaking English when that may or may not be your native language and all these different things. So it's just, I get very in my head about it and I don't necessarily know how to address it yet.
I quite literally, like to be honest with you, I quite literally never address it unless someone asks.
I do.
Yeah, you do.
I do in some contexts, right? Like if someone does it on Slack or something or does it in a meeting, sometimes I'll message them after and be like, hey, just so you know, like maybe you don't know my pronouns. Like I don't like being the only one to bring it up. But if it's people I work with on a daily basis, then I'm like, no, you should use my correct pronouns, right? Like you know me. But yeah, when I'm in this kind of situation, it makes me want to die and I don't know what to do about it.
I feel like for me, I'm like so far off and like everything's made up of the points don't matter that like the way that like I personally and emotionally deal with it is the fact that I don't even see gender as a like real thing. Like she, her is a construct. He, him's a construct. It's all fake, whatever. I don't care. Like I do care. I care in that, like, I am not a woman. I do not feel like a woman. I've never felt like a woman. I way more likely am a boy than I am a girl. Like, if I were to, like, have to choose. But to me, I don't know why. I just personally have gotten to a point internally where, like, it usually doesn't feel like psychic damage. just because, like, I don't give a fuck about this person. Like, that's normal. But if you're at work, then you're like, well, I have to, like, continue, like, talking to this person. And even if I don't really care about them, it's not, like, a continued relationship. Or it is a continued relationship.
Yeah, yeah. Because, like, I go to the doctor and I'm not, like, unless they ask, I'm not like, by the way, you must address me by these pronouns. Like, that doesn't bother me. Like, I also am not bothered by strangers on the street or whatever, unless, like, that makes it sound like people are just going up to me and being like, hey, she, her. But you know what I mean? Like, if I'm just having an, hey, bitch.
Dude, that is how I address you.
That's also gender neutral for me, so it's fine. I identify as they, them, and stupid bitch. But yeah, like, that doesn't bother me because I have a lot of feelings on, like, yeah, you shouldn't. It's impossible to assume someone's pronouns correctly. And I know, I'm aware of how I look to the majority of humans. That's fine. But there's something about it being a work context and also feeling like, I don't know. I like I said, I haven't done any in-person work stuff since the, like, pandemic. And also I didn't have exclusively they, them pronouns before. So, like, this is all new to me too. And then adding on the extra, like, cultural differences and things like that, that I don't know how to navigate on a good day. We talked about, like, masking, and that's kind of what it feels like to me, is like, it's like the mental calculus of trying to navigate a situation. And then with, like, recently realizing that I'm some kind of neurospicy, and this being, like, such an intense event for me in terms of, like, interacting with more people and in a professional context, like, for the first time in a long time, it just felt like a lot. And I was kind of like, I was having some behind the scenes meltdowns that I hope were not apparent to some other folks. It's hard. It's hard because realizing I'm some kind of neurodivergent and, like, unlearning all the different ways that I mask without realizing it, and then, like, those masks not feeling available to me when I need them, has been really difficult for me to navigate. So it's just, it felt really messy. And I felt like I was not doing as good of a job at pretending I was okay.
Yeah, I definitely have, like, personally run into that a lot lately. More behind the scenes. We're actually recording this on a different day because yesterday I was sitting in the closet for 4 hours because I just couldn't do the day anymore.
I like how, so I told Colby, like, oh, by the way, we changed the day we're recording, because, and he's like, oh, wait, why? Is everything okay? I was like, well, Liz said that they're not feeling up for it emotionally, but I guess I should make sure that they know they can talk to me, because I just said, oh, yeah, sure, like, let's reschedule. And then I came back, I was like, that wasn't me dismissing you. If you want to talk about it, I kind of assumed you would just tell me about it.
Yeah, no, your reaction was the correct reaction. Just like, okay.
Yeah, but he said that and I was like, oh, am I an asshole?
No, that was I'm at a point where, like, I'm trying to learn everything that, like, sometimes I'm, like, such, like, a raw nerve and, you know, trying to, like, learn your dynamics in the world so that I don't get to a point where I almost die because I'm not taking care of myself has made me, like, the rawest nerve on the fucking planet. And also I, like, went off, like, Cetraline because I was like, oh, maybe this is, I just want to see what it's like. And I think that's not helping. And I'm just like, oh, I'm falling apart, bruh. But I feel like it's in a similar way. It's like, as you learn more and more about, like, how your brain actually works and are trying to adapt to it, you lose so many of your prior existing coping mechanisms that weren't great, but they worked and you knew how to deal with them.
Yeah. And now it's like a brave new world. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So it felt like maybe it wasn't even about gender so much as it was about all the other stuff compounding the situation, and, like, my own neurodivergent shit being set off by, like, being in a bunch of situations that aren't my absolute favorite but are obviously worth it enough to me. Like, I did not have to travel. I chose to travel. I chose to be part of this because it is something I enjoy. But it was also, like, you know, I'm putting myself in at risk for a pandemic. I'm putting myself in social situations I don't like being in. The audience that we have there is incredibly male. Like, tech is gendered here, but it's even more so gendered in Europe, at least from my experience. And so, like, I mean, we had, like, a hack day and there was one female attendee, like, just things like that. And I forgot the last time I was in Europe for work, which was, like, 2019, 2018, somewhere around there. I had a similar breakdown because I was like, I'm tired of only looking at white men.
It is like one of the reasons I'm nervous to move to Seattle.
I don't know what it, I don't know. It just hit me in a way that, like, and I imagine there are folks that are like, because I'm white, so at least like I can look at white women and be like, ah, yes, this is like maybe community. But I'm sure if you're a person of color, you're like, yeah, welcome to my reality. Like, I don't know what to tell you. But yeah, it was a lot.
The fact that I get uncomfortable with large amounts of groups of white people and there's no problem. Like, there's no, they know there's no problem. They don't know there's a problem. Right. I can't fucking imagine. How do you survive being non-white and like autistic? Like, that seems like a fucking nightmare.
Oh my God. I saw, I don't remember what it was about, but someone was tweeting about how like those things are intrinsically linked. Like, I can't talk about my autism without talking about being black because those things are linked for all these reasons. And I just, so many people in the replies not understanding, like, but I have these experiences too and I'm white, and it's like, right, but
you don't. They're different.
Yeah, it's different. And like, you also don't have to understand it to say like, okay, I accept that that's for your reality. Like, yeah. It's fine.
Yeah, just like gender is also like inextricably linked to like your experience with autism. Why would you not think that race is? There's a lot of reasons. But we can't get into that.
Yeah, that's a whole other podcast. But yeah, anyway, I didn't realize I had so much to say about that. I thought it was just silly because I was like, ah, ha, ha, I'm getting so worked up about this thing I didn't used to get worked up about. And then it was like, actually, here's all the things I hated. So I had a great time. Like, I want to be clear. It was just, I'm realizing that like, I just don't have the masks available that I used to have. And that's a little frustrating.
Yeah, I also feel like with gender right now, I feel like both of us are a little bit of like Humpty Dumpty on a wall, if you get what I mean.
What the fuck does that mean?
Our egg's not cracked yet.
Like, oh, I was like, I am large and round, but I don't know what, and like almost broken, like about to be on the precipice.
Yeah, okay, on the edge, bruh.
Yeah, I'm on the one step closer to the edge. Okay, what is your gender bliss this mess?
So with everything I've been going through in the past month, you know, I've had a pretty dramatic time, both great, bad. Sometimes you spend 4 hours in a closet. Sometimes you have a great evening. It's whatever. Anyways, I've mentioned on the podcast, I'm sure, that I'm currently going through a phase of like being obsessed with how like accessories can change an outfit and like how one item can really like fully add to your closet without having to be like a big hurrah. And so I don't, like, it just kind of started like happening in the back of my brain. I don't know what triggered it, but I was like, I want to start painting my nails. Now, a little backstory to this. I used to paint my, like, back in the big Simply Nailogical, like, 2014 days, I used to paint my nails all the time. It was just like, I was really miserable in life. So it was like one of the few like self-care things I did. But eventually I got to the point where like, I really hated it. And I would say like the experience now looking back was like a dysphoric feeling. I have really like a wide set like nail base, and I don't like having long nails. Turns out autism. So like they're just like little chunky little bitches, and they just never felt like quote unquote adequately feminine in the way that like I would expect for it to look.
The amount of time, like, not to interrupt and make this about me, but the amount of times I've been like, I can fix everything else I hate about me and my body with surgery, but I can't fix my nail beds. Like, who the fuck fixed like that?
Turns out trans people. So,
by the way, these days my nail beds do not bother me. So, like, I don't know. Maybe there's something about coming out and not having the expectations placed on you by society that is nice.
I mean, you also have beautiful nails, but that's neither here nor there.
I agree.
But anyways, you know, going back and like listening to the music I've always listened to, it's a whole bunch of boys who wear nail polish. And I was like, oh, right. It's okay. There's a lot of, I'm on a very specific type of TikTok of people being like, I wish,
what a good way to start a sentence.
I wish I could be beautiful the way a boy is. And then there will be a trans person being like, I'm just like, oh, like, it's like cracking part of my egg I didn't know existed, because I'm just like, well, I've always wished I could be beautiful in the way a boy is. Like, that's how I've always felt. I'd never want to be beautiful in the way a girl is. That does nothing for me. And I don't even want to be masculine in the way a girl is. I want to be beautiful the way a boy is. And so I've always been really envious of boys who get to paint their nails and then suddenly they're being feminine. But when I do it, I'm falling into like gendered stereotypes.
Everything you're saying is just like reflecting with me. So like resonating with me in a way that is making me uncomfortable.
It still makes me uncomfortable too, bro.
Because that's how I feel about like gender nonconforming men or non-binary people or whatever that like will wear a dress and you're like Gerard Way during this whole tour is just like, oh, I wore a cheerleader outfit and you're like, wow, the gender of it all. But like if I do it, it's just like, wow, the stereotypicalness of it all. I don't even know like what the word is I'm looking for, but it's just completely different.
Yeah, I want to be a girl in a way that only a boy could be a girl.
Feel that so hard.
I like that's the weirdest part is that like, okay, so I think I might be a boy, but in no way that makes sense to change pronouns or gender because I want to be a girl boy. It's very fucked. Anyways.
I do know a lot of like not a lot, but I know a non-zero amount of trans men that are also very soft and like enjoy makeup and do drag and all that stuff. Like so it's a gender. It's out there.
Yeah. It's just it's very hard to figure out how to present. But here's where we get to this.
Like, what do I do with this information? I only know how to be a girl the way a girl is a girl.
Yeah. And like, I'm starting to figure out some things. And actually, as it turns out, okay. So I started like thinking about like what color nails do boys tend to do? They tend to do almost always either like a dark color or like metallic colors, like either or. And so I started buying like I have like silvers and like dark blues and like gunmetal and like all that kind of stuff. Like just anything I think I would have seen on like a boy at the fucking Warped Tour. Like that's the kind of colors I'm looking for.
And now
I got to keep my nails super short, which is how I like them, paint them and feel like a boy. Because
question mark.
I'm choosing colors that, like a silver nail polish, which I have always been attracted to silver nail polish since I was very young. But to me, it always reads as a masculine nail color because it does not make your nails shape look good. And so now it feels, I don't know. In my head, I just think of lipstick for men. The like only joke I know from Friends or whatever.
Yeah.
Which is tracks to be the one thing to like progress over to my world. But
yeah,
for some reason,
like in your brain. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I want lipstick for men, but it is like interesting to like now do my nails in a way that like feels masculine and does. It's just very strange that like, even though I don't necessarily care if other people read it that way as much as I care that I feel that way.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Does it? I feel like some of the battle that I have with this, and this may not be true for you, is that it feels like almost misogynistic to take something that is like feminine and originally sort of like for girls, especially like this self-expression piece, right? Like fashion or whatever, and be like, I want that, but as a boy cosplaying a girl. Like there's something about that that feels like it could be misogynistic, I think, in the back of my mind. And that stops me from exploring it further because I'm like, no, women are great. And then I just shut down the thought.
I definitely think that there is something there. I don't really, like, I don't know how to put a finger on it too, but it was that thing in college where I was just like, a lot of drag is misogyny because it views women as cosplay. And so boys doing traditionally feminine stuff often reads as like cosplay. And I think you and I probably have some like guys in mind that like wear nail polish clearly to be like not like other guys,
and
they're just as bad as other guys, if not worse. Like they're like the quote unquote nice guy stereotype.
I'm also thinking about like one problem I used to have with like Too Faced as a makeup company is that their CEO was a man that did not wear makeup, and I'm like, you shouldn't be doing this. Like there's something about it that I don't think it's like inappropriate to explore, but there's something about it that my brain just shuts down and is like, I don't know. There's something there. Maybe I'll.
Yeah, I mean, well, it's also like in many ways feels like taking advantage of a community that should like it, you're not even part of this. Boy, why are you in here?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I definitely think that there that is there, and it is something that like it bothers me that there even is such a thing of like feminine for a boy, but that isn't possible to portray in the same way, the opposite way. And I've always felt this way, and I'm sure you have too, where it's like when you're a tomboy girl, you're just a tomboy girl, and that's nothing, right? Look, that means nothing. There's nothing that a girl can really do that fully betrays gender because of our position in society.
Yeah. And the girls are also allowed to cross over in a way that boys aren't.
Correct. And so you don't get to be gender fuckery in the same way as a girl.
And maybe that's it. Like, I feel like I often think about like the male gaze versus the female gaze when it comes to this. Like, because you said, I don't care if other people read it that way, but I care that I read it that way. And that's how I feel about, like, it may not look like my external appearance has changed much for others, but I'm doing it in not with any desire to look hot for men, which I don't think was ever part of it, but was still more built in than it is now.
Yeah.
Just because of society. So I feel like there's something to be said about like the perspective you look at it. And I guess my fear might be that I'm looking at it with a misogynistic lens because that is the default.
I highly doubt that, but I definitely think there's more of like, I think there's more gender issues tied up in it than you think because of just the way we were raised and the era we were raised in. Because I definitely have it as well, but to me it doesn't like register. I think because of our assigned gender at birth, it can't physically register to me as misogyny because ultimately I am still falling within the stereotypes of what I was born with. So even if I'm doing it through a like masculine lens, it still can't be. But like that doesn't register for me. So I'm curious because since we both have this exact same feeling, but not necessarily the same like root of it, whether or not there's like something like another layer deeper that we just haven't like gotten to yet.
That's probably it. I mean, I feel like I'm still scratching the surface on a lot of this gender stuff because it's so messy and difficult to sort through in the first place. And then like I find another thread and it's like, oh, by the way, you're autistic, you know, like.
Yeah, I like that's why I always kind of talk about like how I wish we had like more acknowledgement of like more genders rather than just like three right now. And like,
oh, it's wild that we even have three, but it's so frustrating that it's like, okay, I think it's really funny when it's like male, female, other, because I'd almost rather that than it only default to non-binary.
Same. 100%.
Because I do feel more like other than like non-binary is just the word that we're currently using for what I feel, but it's also supposed to be an umbrella term. So being like, oh, which of these three binary options are you? I'm the non-binary one. Like, no, we just made a trinary, y'all.
Yeah, it gets, I also think this is a bit of like a wee bit of autism of just being like, there needs to be a specific word for being like, I'm a girl who's a boy who's a girl. I don't know what to tell you about that.
And also the very literalness of like, it says non-binary and you're making me make a choice between some binary decisions here. Yeah.
Yeah. It's very hard not. It's very, very, very hard to get over like the black and white thinking of like, well, I'm not a girl and I'm not a boy, but I am both, but also I am neither. And this doesn't work. And I'm very confused and it's very hard.
I'm glad I'm not the only one, but it is, you'd think like with all of, especially a lot of the like neuro spicy people being in a similar gender boat, you think we'd have more of this figured out. Like, why can't I just like watch a TikTok and be like, ah, got it.
I mean, like, I am honestly like, so I guess thankful that we're at this point where we're at. Because I know for a lot of people, it does seem like this came out of nowhere. But like this part of our community has always existed, but never in a way as loud as it is now. Because again, like I've said, I've known this part of myself forever. And I even had a word for it at 19 because I was lucky enough to read a book that had a word for it. Yeah. But it was always things that you would only ever see if you were like deep into like very like deep into your like local queer culture often that you would ever find other people like that. So we'll see.
Yeah. And thanks, my little brain was like, I can't be gender queer because I don't dress weird.
You in like, full Lolita gear with lace and bows. No, I'm not gender queer.
Well, but that's like meeting the feminine expectation. Therefore, yeah, I don't look. Why am I weird? Why can't I figure out how to not be fucking weird all the time?
Yeah, dude, I've got to be more normal.
I've got to be normaler. Literally, me at this fucking trip, like, I'm so painfully aware of all the ways that I am weird and that my, like, mask is just not even capable of staying on at this point. And I'm just like, stop talking.
No,
so painful.
I am glad I am no longer in the professional workforce. I will say that.
Yeah.
Even though I worked at a place that was incredibly, like, the place I worked was very, very, very queer friendly and had tons of other people like me. But
it's not even the queer part, like, necessarily.
It's just hard to be in professional spaces.
Is queer stuff. Yeah, it's hard to be in professional spaces and then, like, just the very, it feels like the ugly duckling, like, molting stage of discovering more about my brain. It's like, oh, everything is coming off. I'm very ugly. Do not look at me.
It is. It is very much like I'm getting new shiny armor, but currently I'm naked and afraid.
Work in progress.
Yeah, yeah. Big same. Do we want to move on to our discussion now?
I guess so.
All right. This week, our discussion is potentially going to be the most divisive subject we might ever have.
Oh, I don't think we have a super hot take opinion on it.
I do, surprisingly. But maybe that's just because of the internet I'm on.
Okay, let's dive in.
All right, so this week we're going to be talking about AI art and just our feelings as people in tech and art.
Oh my God, that's our new podcast name. You are art, I am tech.
It's true. I mean, whenever we were originally thinking about coming back, we thought about like being even deeply more specific about being a tech and art podcast because those are things we're both deeply passionate about. But then we realized that would be too much work and we don't want to do that.
Well, I think it's also like, I don't necessarily want to attract more tech people to my life. This is no shame. Yeah. But like, I love all the people that I've met in tech that I'm friends with and stuff. But like, yeah, it's not like words I want to put out there for SEO on this. Yeah.
Yeah. I find AI art to be both an interesting topic and a maddening topic. And I had to put this on our, I have like a very small list of potential discussions if we happen to be talking about a week and we can't come up with a discussion based off of how our week's gone, then we have like a backlog. So I've had AI art as a backlog for a while. But this week when I opened Reddit one day on accident, I don't normally go there.
The only way to open Reddit, yeah.
I like go on there occasionally, but like this was not me actively trying to run into that forum. And I'm in, you know, a couple art ones. And there was just this post of, I have to guess, like a 20-year-old being like, how do you not find so much despair in AI art? And how do you just like keep going when you know it's going to take your jobs and there's not going to be anything left for us? And it's just like so disparaging and blah, blah, blah. And it's just like, I'm going to bash my head into a fucking wall.
Well, I thought that was interesting when you sent that to me because A, like this person was clearly young, but B, it was just the same securities that people are always having about art, which is, but other people do better art or like there are no new ideas in the world. Like it's the same cycle just now with a new boogeyman, right?
Yeah. So to kind of give a background story, if any of you don't happen to be on art or tech Twitter, which like both are very annoying,
by the way. Yeah.
long story short, it's an AI. You could type in some words and it creates a picture. Sometimes the picture is very beautiful. Now you see some people who are like authors using it as art for their books or people who are making games using it for their games and like using it as a tool to like get like faster art quicker. And so, you know, you can see the fear from like professional artists being like, oh, well, this is part of what my job is. So like, what does this mean for my job? Right. To me, this is such a case where if I look at either side of the argument, I still just I just want to bash my head into a fucking wall.
You said that.
No, because that's I like it's very hard for me to avoid doing it. Like it's like a very visceral internal feeling I have to just physically hurt myself. Just like a, you know, emo, whatever. So you got the art side who are, you know, it's clearly like an existential fear of what the future of tech and art means. And AI art's here to stay. It's only gonna get more complex, it's only gonna get more intense. We're going to see AI music in the future. We're going to see AI a lot more other stuff, right? And so you see this fear of like, what is my point? And then on the tech side, you, and also there is I think it also is bringing up this like deep-seated fear of the internet to begin with and technology to begin with, which exists. But everyone just gets to like the, like their immediate, like it's bad, it's evil. Like it feels very similar to the like, conversation about NFTs, but in the same way that like artists were getting it wrong the whole time, where it's just like, well, the problem isn't that the art's attached, and yes, the there's a problem with them stealing art, but the art isn't the problem.
Yeah, I was actually going to bring that up because I think one of the very legitimate and salient points being made by artists is like that a lot of these AIs are trained on copywritten art or like, you know, art without getting the permission of the artist, which is effectively the same thing, right? Because you automatically have a copyright on your work. And so like you can go, and by the way, all the examples that pop up on my feed at this point are jokes. So like there's one that was like Elsa in the style of this specific artist, large boobs, robe, bra, like those are the words that they're using. And sure enough, like it'll populate like a portrait of Elsa with giant knockers for some reason in the style of this specific artist. So like there is a very legitimate point to be made when it comes to copyright and like stealing work from artists, because that is how the AIs so far have been trained. I think that is valid.
Yeah, but and they can also be fed specific images, which makes it even a little bit more concerning.
Well, that's what do you mean by that?
Like you can be like, this image is an image I want you to pull from, like this specific image.
I hadn't seen that. That's wild. But like, well, because a lot of artists sign their work, that's like one way that they're able to say like, oh, in the style of this artist. And then, yeah, just varying things like that. So I think that's a legitimate thing. Like, I think if you're selling or allowing people to use an AI for things that especially could have been a paid job for an artist, you need to be very clear about how they are trained. And you need to be paying the artists that you're training the AI on. Like, I think that's pretty clear ethical answer there. But then you see the artists be like, therefore all AI generated art tools or whatever are bad and should never be used. And I think what's more interesting is using it as a tool. Like I've seen a lot of artists, use it to generate like a base and then draw on top of it or work with it in some way, or use it to generate a palette or an idea, but then like draw their art on top of it or to the side or whatever and add on and change. And like the final result is almost like intrinsically going to be better than just the AI generated art, right? But you can use it as a starting point. It's the same as if you use a reference photo site or something. Like to me, it's also very similar.
It also makes me think of kit bashing, which I'm not sure if everyone probably doesn't know what kit bashing is. But like, say you see like imagery that someone came up for like a land, like for a video game, like some of the perspective art. I can't remember the right name for it. But basically, all of that art is made up of different images and then painted over.
I just wanted to quickly add that I meant photo bashing here, not kit bashing. Wanted to correct just in case you wanted to Google.
It's not actually fully drawn by the artist. It's called kit bashing. You take art or you take pictures, put them together, and then you draw over it. Therefore, it saves time and you're using your tools to your advantage. So AI has been used in art for fucking years. And like if you go to like video games, for example, this is a lot of things are auto-generated based off of some base stuff. Because it's much easier. And it doesn't mean that a human's not making it. And to me, it's kind of like, it's like the innate fear of like industrialization, which is real. And like, I think it would be a lot more interesting if we were actually talking about how we feel this existential threat of it. It'd be a lot more interesting if we were having ethical discussions of it, like proper ethical discussions of it, and not just being like, I'm afraid of it, therefore it's bad.
Yeah. And I guess the tech argument would be like, I don't know, the complete opposite. No, it's fine. And copyright is not real because like,
yeah. And tech bros are
artists. Yeah.
Annoying. And like, there's also the like, oh, we're never going to need artists again. And it's just not true. Like,
yeah, that's people just inherently still, not true.
People buy handmade lace still. There will always be a market for handmade stuff. And to me, so much of it also feels like, why are, and like, I will say I come from a great place of privilege where I currently do not have to make money from my art, but also my husband is technically an artist, even if he works as a developer, like he makes art for a living. So like, it technically could be an existential threat, but honestly, it would be more of a tool. Cause like, let's say he wants to make an independent video game, AI art could really help him get the parts that he can't do on his own. It yeah. speeds up. It gives the individual more power of things that they don't have access to before. And
I think a lot of it is also like using it for concept art and then hiring an artist to polish that. Like that makes a lot of sense to me because as a non-artist, when I try to communicate ideas about art, I sound stupid. Like I feel stupid. It's like when I go to talk about what haircut I want and I'm like, I don't know, I want it like this. And I realize I'm saying all the hair words wrong. No, I just realized I'm autistic. I don't know. But so wouldn't that be like a way to communicate a little bit better instead of like, I want a dreamy ethereal feel and that doesn't have any defined thing. It's like, oh, this is like some of the ideas I'm going for. It's like a mood board.
Yeah, I haven't gotten the opportunity to play with it yet. I have a full intention of like digging into Midjourney because I'm super curious. It requires effort. But also like, it's not necessarily easy to do. You have to be really specific with the art, the bots right now. And there's, I don't think there's really a near future where that's not true. So I do think that like, there is some things to be talked about, like the amount of time put into it, but also like people said the same thing with photography. Like, oh, you're just pressing a button, but ignoring all of the like, acknowledging that lighting, acknowledging that the settings on the camera make a difference to this. The same thing with like, the AI is made by people. So that's one choice. Like the difference between stuff made by Dolly and the stuff made by Midjourney looks completely different because where these AIs are pulling from. In addition,
Dolly is a lot more of a nightmare.
Yeah, tool. I'm not a big, there's another one that's pretty good, but I can't remember his name. Something like, I can't remember. I feel like it starts with like S. But yeah, I hate Dolly's stuff, but that's obviously not it. But most artists I see are using Midjourney because it does create more artsy stuff, but it definitely would like recreate. But like, it's good for like poses for an artist, for example. Mm-hmm. You could use it to like pull up a pose or like get the right, like a little bit better context of what you're trying to create and make sure it works. And it's just interesting to, or I guess not interesting to me, but it's very frustrating to me to see people be so aggressively negative towards it and just like having all these immediately like, it's not art, it can't be real, how dare you, like, you know, there was the one person who won the art competition with AI art. Mm-hmm. And I get the gut reaction to be like, that shouldn't be a thing, but it also took him like 80 hours to make,
which is weird. Like that's not the part that you hear about. Yeah,
because you have to fine tune it. The words you use have to be specific. You have to work with the tool to make it work.
And I don't necessarily even think that, like, I don't think that that person winning is bad. Like, I just think it should have been clear, like, from the get-go, or like maybe there should be an AI category because I think you should compare things that are similar, right? And actually, you mentioned photography, and I think that's such a good example because, like, photography didn't kill painting. Like, painting is still a thing. And digital cameras, phone cameras did not kill photography even. Like, just because it's more accessible to people does not mean that we do not need skilled people. Like, you don't see people like you or me doing product shots for a brand because we have an iPhone.
Yeah. It also, like, and this is a weird thing that I haven't, like, really fully brought out my thoughts yet. But in some ways, it feels kind of, like, elitist. Because shouldn't everyone have access to being able to make art? And if they don't have the physical ability to do it with their hands, but they have the ideas, why not have assistance?
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. And like making art accessible is not, like, generally, I think accessibility is never a bad thing. But like, I think there's ways we can do it that are more respectful to the artists that are like, that the AI is being trained on, that's more respectful to, like, if you're in an art competition, maybe have an AI art category. Like,
yeah, absolutely.
There's things you can do to make it, like, seem more fair. But I think it comes from the insecurity of being replaced. It comes from the insecurity of not being able to make money off of it anymore. And I just don't think, like, some of the people that make the most money by being a full-time artist do furry commissions. And I just don't think that's going to be replaced by this. Like, thinking about specific examples, I just don't think it's going to be replaced by AI art anytime soon.
Well, yeah, just like at the end of the day, like, we innately know that something handmade by a human is different than something not. Like, we know innately as people, and some people don't need that. Okay, then why force them? Like, it feels so, like, I obviously don't find it to be an existential threat, because that's just a waste of my time. Like, everything's an existential threat ultimately. But I just, like, it frustrates me, like, hearing people talking about, like, how dare they let an AI art person win, and instead being like, okay, well, this is the first time we've run into this. It's not art. He didn't not spend a lot of time. He didn't not have a vision when he created this, and the people who viewed it did not think it was beautiful.
Right.
All of these things are true. So let's just accept it as what it is. Because I hate people saying it's not art. Well, then what is art? You're not coming to me ever saying, what do you think art is then? Because you're not willing to say that, because the second you start saying that, you disqualify a lot of artists, and you know that.
Right. And I think that's so interesting, is that's been the conversation with, like, every art movement and every, like, new technology innovation or whatever, is like, oh, this isn't art. This isn't art. And it's like, have we not learned anything from the history?
Like, to me, if it is creative, it is art. AI art is absolutely art. Now, if it were an AI specifically making that art, that an AI made by another AI, like, there, like, it is multiple steps away from human creation, then I might have some questions. But, like, we could be talking about the fun parts of this. Like, there are a lot of ethics questions with it. For example, mm-hmm. Let's say I did make an art. I even just used Midjourney art as part of my art, right? And from there, that art sells for $10,000. Does the developer of Midjourney have any rights to that art? That's the question. I don't know the answer. I'm sure we have some, I don't know a lot about, like, copyright law. And I'm sure there is, like, similar things on the books about that. Like, that's a great question, because they are part of the creator of your art. It's just true.
Yeah, but I'm sure that's in, like, the terms of service and stuff. Like,
oh yeah, but, like, the fact that, because even terms of services mean nothing in the end of days. You could still, you could still question that in a court of law, and it cannot stand up.
No, absolutely true.
Protects you, but, like,
no, yeah, totally. But what I'm saying is, like, I think that's interesting. I think that's the kind of stuff I'm more interested in than, like, all AI work bad.
And because it's not art. Yes, it is. And,
yeah, I haven't seen as many people say it's not art so much
I've,
like,
almost exclusively seen that.
I don't think I'm paying as much attention as part of it. Because I've also seen, like, artists do stuff in collaboration with the AI stuff. And I think that's really interesting. And maybe I'm just paying more attention to the stuff I find interesting. But, like, I also think artists and just people in general overestimate how much technology can do.
Yes.
And how much the AI is actually generating, and how AIs are trained, and just all this different stuff, because we saw this also happen with NFTs, which was, like, a lot of artists are like, I have literally no idea how this works, but I've heard it's bad. Like, is that true? Like, I was explaining it a lot because I in a previous life, I wrote sales enablement content, and I wrote sales enablement content around blockchain and like what that is. And so I was like, because they're like, what the fuck is blockchain? Like, this is not a thing I thought I would have to know about to be an artist. and I'm like, yeah, let me like try to explain it to you in a way that makes sense. And so you can make your own conclusion about it. But like, I find it really interesting that like, I think there is an innate fear of technology because it's not in the wheelhouse of most artists, and it's not something that you need to know to like do your job necessarily. But then you like, people really think that you can just type like award-winning art piece and it just generates an art piece.
I think that is a super good point. And I think that might be a huge reason why I get so frustrated, because I completely understand how AIs work.
Right. Like, so AI like is such a, I don't know if misnomer is even the right word, but it's like an overestimation of what technology is capable of, because
especially right now
and especially with images. So, like I've seen AIs be trained, and basically what that means is, if you're trying to say like, is this person smiling in this picture? Like, that's what you're training the AI on. They'll return a result and you tell them whether it's right or wrong. And you do that like a million times until it slowly gets it more right than not. But AI is not really that smart, quote unquote smart. It's like a series of if statements. Like, it's just like, oh, if this is true, then the probability is that the person is smiling in the photo. Like, just shit like that. So it's not nearly as, I guess, like the black box of what the tech is doing is not nearly as interesting as you think it is.
Well, it's also interesting to see, like, I guess on the opposite side, to be critical of tech, to see how they can kind of take advantage of general people's ignorance towards AI this way. I haven't listened to it yet, but Mozilla has a podcast called IRL, and their most recent season was actually about like essentially ethics and AI. And the whole entire like idea is that AI is made from people. We're about to move into a world that is significantly run by AI. We need to make sure to have an eye on the people who are creating this, because if we don't, we know AI becomes racist immediately.
Mm-hmm.
Like within seconds, like it will immediately go fucking racist if it's not fucking trained not to, because it's made by people and it's made by auto, like generated content. So if it's generating content from like the wrong places, you know, the internet has that. So like, it's so easy to make a fucking bot become a Nazi. It's absurd because it's stupid.
Yeah. I on this exact same point, Google used to have an ethics and AI department, and the lead person was basically like,
bullshit.
Well, so the person, well, they hired like actual like researchers, like people that this is their like PhD, this is their livelihood, is studying like ethics and AI. And I believe I'm gonna not get the story completely correct because it was a couple of years ago now, but I follow the person. Her name is Timnit Gebru. I will put it in the description. But she came out about like her experience and like the very unethical way that they treated her, because she basically was like, I think it was like, hey, this project, whatever we're working on, needs to end because there's no way it can be ethical because of like this, that, and the other. Because again, like humans make the tech, so tech is not neutral. And they basically responded by like letting her go in a very like shitty way. And it was like this whole big thing, like to the point where some of the other people on that team also stepped down after, because they were like, you handled this entirely poorly. But like, there are people who are doing the work to try to include ethics in the discussion around AI. But when you have capitalism, it turns out that companies are not interested in the ethics, even if they will literally pay you to tell them, hey, don't do this. They're like, too bad. And they fire you. So yeah, I think there's work going on there, but I think it's totally fair to be critical and skeptical of anything that is trying to make money, because it is most likely not going to be ethical. And the,
made by white men.
Yes. Well, that's what I was going to say is, but also because tech has a gender and a race problem. But I was going to say the example of automatic hand soap dispensers or like air hand dryers not working for people of color because they just didn't test them for people of color is such a good example of the like we're not supposed to say blind spots, right? What is the non-ableist way to say that?
Overlooked. But,
yeah, the overlooked areas in tech when you just don't have people involved that are helping you not overlook that. And you were like, oh yeah, turns out like the couple of Black people on our team, it doesn't work for them. We should address that. And instead you only find out when it's in production. So yeah, I'm just saying be skeptical and be aware of who is creating these tools. I think that is a totally fair argument. I think that is where the NFT stuff really broke down, is when you looked at who was interested in and investing in it. But yeah, I mean, that's a whole other argument to like all AI art is inherently not art or not good or whatever.
Yeah. And I also think that's an incredibly valid way to go, is like, are we viewing the ethics of, again, as you mentioned early on, where is it getting these images from? How much is it stealing from these images? Because let's be honest, all art is making art based off things that already exist. Like, that is how art works.
But well, art is referential, but that's different than stealing. Yeah.
Right. To what point is it too far? Right. And we don't know yet. We'll figure that out one day. Like, it is worrying to think that someday someone could be like, art in the style of you, of your art, and just get it. And yeah, people will innately know it's different, but it's also going to be like real easy to fake it. Like you have with like people being able to fully fake videos now. And yeah, it's complicated, but it also makes me think of that fucking like Google engineer who was like, yeah, the AI is sentient. And it's like, no, it's not. It's not.
It's
you're
super
stupid.
Not.
It's men have never not. Felt feelings again, and you're just horny for a robot. I don't know what to tell you. Go watch her or some shit.
I think it's so funny that like we're just not there with tech yet. Like, you should be afraid of tech. You should be skeptical. There's a lot of things you should be, but like we're not to the point that AI is that smart. It really isn't.
No, and we'll also probably not get there within our lifetimes, I would say. It really depends on how much if we ever have anyone actually step in to help. Otherwise, we are very much going towards like the worst option of a cyberpunk future, which is already happening. But
yeah, I don't know about if we won't see it happen in our lifetime, just because tech accelerates so quickly now.
But it has an upper limit that it's already starting to hit the ceiling on to a degree.
Yeah, I just I don't feel as confident making a judgment call on that. I think I could be surprised. But I also think we're not going to get to that point with only having the people creating the tech being biased, right? Like, because that like clearly like you want your AI to be smarter than a human. Well, it's not going to be if it has all these built-in biases.
Yeah, I don't think that like right now with like the current like shareholder market / white men running everything that we're going to get anything fucking useful.
Yes, I think useful to me, useful for the stuff I want. Absolutely.
Useful for humanity's well-being.
Yes.
Yes.
I think that's
I guess
fair.
I think saying the word useful very much comes from my own personal ethics, because it'll be useful for some people, but not people you want it to be useful for.
Right. Like that was my immediate thought, because like anytime we're talking about like AI and stuff like that, I immediately think of facial recognition technology. And yeah. I was doing some work thing about it, and I was reading a case study where they used it as they used facial recognition as your ticket to get into this big sporting event. And like, I want to say it was like in Brazil, it was like soccer or something like that. And so instead of having to like show a ticket, you just showed your face and the biometric data got you in, which is my nightmare, by the way. Like, I hate when.
Yes.
Like, I will never do Clear, even though they probably already have all of my data because I do global entry. I don't know. Everything just feels weird about it. At the airport, Clear is an airport thing if you're not a traveler. And so they mentioned like, oh yeah, not only was this great because like it was way faster to get in and therefore everyone was happy because they didn't have to wait in line as long, but also we were able to arrest a bunch of people that had open warrants. I'm like, no, wait, that's terrible actually, because they were like, hey, like I don't really care what crime they did, but they were like, hey, I'm going to go to the sports game. And then they got fucking arrested.
Also, probably whatever crime they did doesn't matter.
Right.
Very few crimes are real.
Well, every time I say something similar to that, my first thought is like, what if they did a murder? So that's where I'm at.
Like, cops find murderers. They don't. They have the worst rates of finding murderers in like American history right now. So no, I know.
I know, but that's still my first thought is like, anytime I'm like, yeah, defend they the police or whatever. They probably
ran a red light, which is bad.
I mean, also puts people in danger, yes, but like the severity, it's like when they caught the Golden State Killer and they were able to get the DNA match because he like threw away a napkin at a store and they were tailing him. And you're like, well, that's kind of worth it because he did a lot of murders and did a lot of bad things and like traumatized a lot of families and was never caught. Okay, cool. But like, if they're doing
legitimate investigation,
right?
You thought it was him. He made a mistake and left his evidence all around.
I think that's a you mean like the crime scene?
Well, yeah, he left like DNA at the crime scene, which obviously he didn't know about DNA, but he would have known more than other people because he was a cop. And also he left a cup somewhere. Like, it's not him just like in some ways it's just him existing, but at least within like the physical reality of the world and opting into that, because a lot of the ways that like tech stalks you, you do not have a choice to opt in. It is physically impossible to opt out of this stuff currently.
Yeah.
Especially
in and again, like, I think the degree of his crimes are worth, like, if he got caught at a sports game, I wouldn't feel bad about it. But I'm certain that most of the people that were like arrested or whatever were not doing things that were that harmful.
No, and the I would bet some money that the reason that they switched to biometric data was for the cops.
I'm sure it wasn't the like purported like, oh, it was so much faster and we had happier satisfaction, because since when do major like sporting venues or like stadiums care about that? Like, I've never been to one and really felt like, wow, what a good user experience.
Yeah, you shouldn't trust AI, but not because it's making images that make you feel your job is existentially threatened, because A, all of our jobs are threatened by technology. That's just a fact. Jobs really shouldn't exist anymore, and we should just let technology do it. That's a whole thing. Whatever. Literally.
Yeah.
But it is, yeah. Just look at how cops are using AI, and they'd be like, oh, this is insanely dangerous.
Yeah. And look who's making it. Look who, like, ask all the questions you do about ethical consumption, no matter what, right? Who's making it? Who provided the sample data? Like, who's profiting off of it? Who's not getting money out of it? Like, it all comes down to that, in my opinion. I think that's a good way to judge a lot of things.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure as this podcast goes on, if we continue throughout the years, you'll hear more and more about how terrifying AI is, because things don't seem to be getting better.
Also, like, if you're this far, I assume that you're not going to be mean, but I am curious about what people who are listening think about this, and nuanced takes, please. But I would love to know more thoughts on this, because it is an emerging area and I think we're still figuring out what's coming. So, yeah, you don't necessarily have to tag Liz. You can just bother me or DM me or whatever. But I'm interested. I would love to hear your thoughts as well. And whether you think we can live together with AI or we should be bashing it or whatever.
Here's my thing. I want to be having the conversations that are really deep about the ethics of it, because they're real. They're there. Not AI art is not art. That is something that I firmly just believe is essentially, it's just stupid. I don't like that word, but I just don't think it's you're not acknowledging anything. You're not, okay, what do you think art is? The second you do that, then that goes against whatever you think. That's the part that's frustrating me, is that no one's going further. They're just saying, oh, it's not real art. Okay, what then? What about it? What does that do? I want to have a conversation about the ethics. I think it's real. I think that not liking AI art is probably a real, and there's real valid reasons not to, but like the current reasons I'm seeing now are boring and bad. I want to see good ones that are interesting and existential.
Give me your interesting thoughts. Yes. But if you have a bad thought, don't give it to me.
No bad thoughts. I'm a thought police over here.
I did see a friend joke about, like, you know, the whole use of copyrighted art or copywritten art to train these AIs, like, you know, can we get some legal like protection around this already? And someone else was like, well, just start training it on Disney art. It'll happen real fast.
Well, I was also thinking, like, I feel like half the people who say that shit are also people who make fan art for a living. I'm like, well, let's talk about it.
Ooh, that is a thorny topic.
You really want to talk about this? Because it gets real complicated real fast if that's really what you believe. Because it feels like most people are coming from a really selfish place.
I think to a lot of, I don't know, people don't understand the term fair use. And that's just, I'll just leave it at that. It frustrates me to no end.
I feel like this is like the very specific thing where Mia and I can get really like deep into it really fast, where we're both just like very annoyed by our own fields. Yes. Why are you like this? Just think a little harder, please.
Not me taking an entire business law class and now being like, ugh, why doesn't anyone else know this stuff? Like, bitch, you take a business law class. Calm down.
I know. It's one of those things where I have to remind myself that most people just aren't like this. Like, most people just aren't so like, just so keen to go so deep so fast, and they shouldn't have to, and that like I'm the unreasonable one. Like, I think about this with politics sometimes. Like, I love politics and I'm so deeply into politics, and I think about it like I would say like 70% of the time. Like, it's something that's like so innate to my core being that it
what
gets
was
so
the other thing
me.
You just found out was also related to 9/11.
Garbage's androgyny song came out right after 9/11, so they weren't able to promote it in the same way, and that's why it's not super popular in a lot of like Western places, despite it being a fucking bop.
It is a bop. And when I don't know, you were like, I'm listening to Garbage again, and then you were like, oh god, another 9/11 connection. Like, I know it's a big world event, but it is weird that it's like, well, now we're seeing a similar thing where you go on anyone's Wikipedia page and it's like, Jeanette McCurdy's remaining one-woman shows were canceled due to the COVID-19 pandemic. And yes. You're like, oh, okay.
Yeah, it is very much like obviously, I think we're going to definitely see even a significant amount of similar things because of COVID going forward. And we already are starting
still
to
weird.
See that. But yeah,
it's still weird.
It is.
Yeah. I'm like, sure. But I was there. I was alive.
Yeah. And also, like, it felt more like nothing than 9/11 did, despite it definitively being more.
Well, it was treated the opposite, which was, you know, let's do something versus let's do nothing. Although I would say something that we did was not super helpful.
This just makes me think of, like, I've been thinking a lot about like how a lot more people are realizing they're autistic and ADHD now. And like, everyone's like, oh, it's TikTok. People are just being TikTok diagnosed. And I was like, no, it has to do with the fact that we were all like, originally my like whole thesis, like, oh, we were all locked in with ourselves for like a year or two. And you have to deal with all of your worst aspects of yourself. And then when you go back into society, you realize like all of these things are different about you. But then I've started coming more and more aggressively to the realization that it's because the way that we react to information is so different that nothing made you feel more alienated than just be like, they're just asking us to wear masks. This is just, why is this? This is just a fact. Why are you reacting this way? And just to learn that most people do not react to information the same way you do. It's related to this, but definitely feels a...
It's telling. It was and continues to be a huge realization for me. Like, my friend was like, oh yeah, I've learned that neurotypical people don't like having facts cited at them. And I was like, oh no, my whole life.
But I love facts.
But like, literally, I just like saw into the future and into the past and into all dimensions of time at once. And I saw all the times I've ever done that and not understood why the other person did not take it well. And
yeah, they think it's rude or something.
Right, which I'm like, no, it's just a fact. Like, I'm just telling you a fact. Ah.
Yeah, it's. I'm like, I'm neutral here, buddy.
Like
I just think it's cool.
Not to dive deep into pandemic discussion when we're about to end the podcast, but like, I will say it is weird, like, knowing in therapy, like, that I'm venting about all my, like, pandemic struggles, which I'm sure everyone is doing in therapy, or at least did before everyone decided it was over. And like, my therapist saying stuff that I'm just like, but that's not actually true. Like, it's not better. Like, I don't know why you think that.
I do feel like we're particular challenges on our therapists, not out of like our personal lives, but just being like, I don't know about that.
Oh yeah. My therapist should have known from the beginning when I was like, you know, oh yeah, I switched jobs and now I'm doing this job where I make a lot more money, but I don't necessarily like have the same skills as my as my peers. And so that's a whole thing. And she called it imposter syndrome. And I'm like, let me be clear. I do not have the skills. Like, that's just a fact. And also, what was the other thing I said? Oh, she said something about earning the money. Like, oh, you, well, obviously you're making this money because you earned it. I'm like, whoa, I have a lot of thoughts about the word earn around money. And like, we should all.
No one deserves this much money.
Right. Like, she's like, oh, great. Love this.
It's just like how often my fucking therapist has to hear about Reagan a fucking again. Okay.
I seriously wonder if they talked about us after, like, to, you know, oh yeah, I have this one client that I just learned so much about Ronald Reagan in our sessions.
I feel like they have to. And like, it was in my therapy session, I got to tell the therapist that the queen died and she hadn't heard
yet. That's like a special treat just for you.
I know. It's like, I don't feel like I was like, I know that you don't have a better client to hear this from. I know I'm the number one for this information and it feels good and it feels right. And thank you for letting me have this.
You're like, in case I haven't refreshed you recently, here's what Operation London Bridge is Falling Down is all about.
I'm like, I've just been not waiting for this for years, but waiting for this for years. And it's just.
God, what a fucking time to be alive.
Anyways, I love being diagnosed. It makes feeling about all this stuff a lot easier. Let's move on to the tastemaker is where we recommend you something we've been enjoying lately. And this week, I'll be your tastemaker. And my taste that I am making is the small series Queer for Fear on Shudder. So Shudder is a horror streaming service that most people probably don't pay for, but sometimes my husband does, especially during October. So sometimes we have Shudder. And a whole bunch of drag queens were posting about the series they were on. I was like, And it actually ties in exactly with what I was talking about last week on the podcast about being like a freak and people not understanding it in the way we understand it. Like, that's basically what this show is about. It's about how when you look at horror from the beginning, it has always been innately queer. And that is extremely true. Like, from the beginning, everyone creating horror is gay as fuck. And so specifically, so there, I think, are going to be a total of 4 episodes and they come out on Fridays. And the first 2 episodes are out so far. And the first episode I loved. So the first episode is kind of like the root of horror, or the root of it. So it starts off with like Frankenstein, Mary Shelley, obviously queen, icon, star, which has like been my favorite book for like ever. Like, I wasn't even trying to be an edgelord. It was just like the book, the one, it's not the only book, but it was a book I read. And like my favorite like genre of art of like book or like trope is like loaf who doesn't know they're dangerous. So like that also works into like, oh, what's the great American novel? Not The Pearl, but the other one by that guy, Grapes of Wrath. And then his other one is the one I like. And it's the only one of his books I like. But it's
why can't I remember this? I'm just going to feel terrible about this.
Of Mice and Men.
There you go.
But anyways, it goes over like Frankenstein, like Mary Shelley, who's like obviously a bisexual woman married to a bisexual man who is having sex with other gay men, and they were all making weird gay queer art and like,
wow, it's living also the dream.
Like, they talk about how like we don't often talk about like the trans narrative of Frankenstein, of making a man and playing God, which is something I had never thought about until then, but also like the queerness of wanting to make a man for yourself. And just all of this stuff that like is stuff that like I innately know, but like hearing someone else say it and talk about their relationship with it, and then also hearing how like literally queer a lot of this stuff is. So the first episode goes over Mary Shelley. It goes over Oscar Wilde, Bram Stoker, which is super interesting because I think a lot of it you also get like a lot of internalized homophobia, because like obviously monsters have been queer coded since the beginning because queer people are viewed as monsters. Look at CNN. And so to see like Bram Stoker is one of the interesting ones who like clearly has a lot of internalized homophobia. And to so like they go over that. And then they go over F.W. Murnau, who did like Nosferatu and stuff. and they end on Bela Lugosi's Dracula. And so it kind of is like really early horror, which I don't think you realized how recent horror is until someone tells you the years and they're just like 1890, 1910. And you're like, oh, fuck, that actually wasn't that long ago. When you're young, you don't, that's like, oh, that's forever ago. But then when you think about it, like, oh, that's only like great grandparents. But it's just really interesting. It's really good, especially if you're a queer person who's like trying to figure out their relationship to horror, which is where I'm at right now. I really recommend it. The second episode is about the classic Universal horror films because they're all directed by someone who put a lot of like gayness into it, which I haven't seen any of them. They're on my list this year. But that was really interesting to talk about that. And then they also talked about Hitchcock, but specifically Psycho, because Hitchcock was a huge homophobe who keeps hiring fucking gay people to play it. And gay people are often the enemy in his stuff. He also hates women, but it comes really interesting because they also are like these deeply like queer stories in a way, which I thought was good. Like, I like talking about the dark and the gray and all that stuff of like, let's be real. Hitchcock is a terrible person and a bad person and an evil person. But he did a lot of interesting art, and for that, there's that. But not that that makes any of it excusable. I'd rather not have the art, but nonetheless.
Well, so number one, this sounds really interesting. I'm legitimately very, and also like, I like learning about the pop culture side of the stuff that I may or may not actually consume, right? So like, understanding the cultural significance of this, the horror stuff is more interesting to me than the actual horror sometimes, right?
Yes, strong agree.
And this reminds me of the conversation around like the lack of nuance of characters who are bad or like have like bad qualities, or stories where like a character has internalized homophobia. And it's like, yeah, but also that's like sometimes how you deal with those things is making art out of it. And I think the current like over censorship that we're stuck in, that the like cultural conversation is like, you can't have any like even your enemies or your antagonists in a story cannot have bad thoughts or bad things. It's like, that's literally what an antagonist is. Like, we need a conflict somewhere. It just reminds me of that. And it's like, yeah, you have to have some of the ugly parts of being a human come out to have the art, though.
It's so interesting seeing the left be like the deeply puritanical side.
Yeah,
because it comes from a deeply puritanical place of not accepting that humans are complicated creatures and humans are evil. Let's not, like, I think most humans as a person on an individual level are not. But as a whole, we don't do good things.
Yeah.
So let's just acknowledge that's how humans are.
It's interesting to just act like, to scrub humanity of all the nuance and everybody is just a good person. But instead it's like, I think you're actually taking away the ability to explore some of those darker things and then get to the other side of them.
Yeah. It's a really good series. I have two other side notes that are somewhat related that I just want to put out in the world because they did something for me recently. One is that, you know, we all know how like there's currently this like conversation between like, I guess like horror and true crime, and like because of the Dahmer show. And it, because people are feeling complicated, they're like, well, if I like evil, then does that make me evil? Apparently there's this just saying I really liked that kind of reminded me of just like the queerness in horror, which is the difference between like heroes and villains and why it's like okay to be like, I guess, attracted to the villains, is that a hero will destroy you for the world, but the villain will destroy the world for you. And that like the love for villains has like been studied, and it does come from like isolation and loneliness. So that makes it even more interesting viewing like horror and stuff through like a queer lens. Wow. And the other thing
that's so is, hold on, you just blew my mind.
Right. It's like watching the show will help, like, because I'm trying to figure out why I love and hate horror, because I have such complex feelings about it. Part of me is realizing I specifically like monsters. And monsters gay, are often queer coded.
You're telling me I queer coded this monster.
But I've also been trying to go back and watch all of like classic horror films to kind of just get like a basis of figuring it out. And so this is something I'm also going to ask for direct feedback from. So if you are a fan of the movie Texas Chainsaw Massacre, we need to talk.
I'm sorry. I didn't know where this was going. And it's so funny because so Liz started watching it the other day. And this is one of the movies I remember being forced to watch as like a teenager because we're all trying to be edgy or whatever. And I did not like it. And at the end, Liz was like, no, I'm starting to have some serious thoughts about people who like this movie. Like I don't understand why or how.
Okay, so I have not been able to continue watching any spooky films because this has ruined my appetite so significantly.
Oh,
so
no.
Here is kind of a little back. I know that there are people who listen to this podcast who love this movie who can help me reconfigure these feelings. And that's what I want. So long story behind in my past. When I was like 12 and I was about to go to church camp, we went to the mall to get stuff for church camp, went to Spencer's, saw a Leatherface thing, gave me nightmares for the whole week I was at camp. So I've always been innately terrified of Texas Chainsaw Massacre and never approached it. However, recently, two things made me be like, oh, this might be interesting. One, I was listening to a podcast where Sarah Marshall, who I always think has good opinions, was talking about how Leatherface is really like a victim of circumstance, and it made me really interested in his character. And it is true, Leatherface is a sad character that you can really understandably like. He's not a bad guy, even though he's a murderer. And two, I watched a TikTok that was talking about how, like, you know, horror has always been innately political. Like, you say you hate that the new Texas Chainsaw Massacre is political, but did you watch the first one? And literally the first one, which I've watched now, first off, has a disabled person, which is already a very political choice without any additional context. Second off, Leatherface and his family, spoilers, they all used to work at the fucking like slaughterhouse. And it's like aggressively anti-slaughterhouse. Like, Guillermo del Toro went vegetarian after watching this film. Also, like, in the background, like, news is playing and it's talking about how, like, there was like an oil explosion and all this other like stuff of like industrialization. So ultimately this film is like very much about like the fear of like industrialization and what it can do to people and all of that stuff. And it's also kind of playing with like the fear of like backwater people, right? And so there's this like a lot of stuff it's trying to do, but it is so fucking political and it's obviously trying to be. I don't personally think it succeeds at saying anything that it wants to say, but it was literally made near the end of Vietnam War. Like, it's very clearly a political film. And you cannot watch it without understanding the context that it was made at the near the end of the Vietnam War. Like, what the fuck? Anyways, because we're afraid of chemicals. Anyways, not the point.
I completely forgot about a lot of those details, and especially the slaughterhouse one, which reminded me of another reason I don't like it.
And so
I'm like, too vegan for this.
So I was watching it and like, you know, it's fine. Like, I am 50-50 on whether or not I like a slasher. Like, I really like Wes Craven stuff. I was on this. And then it gets near the end and it's like a solid 20 minutes of just a woman screaming for her life. And it was so deeply fucking traumatic that I had to turn down the sound until the end of the film. Like, it fucking ruined my day so badly. And to me, part of me understands that's part of what people like about horror is that like gut-sinking feeling, right? That's part of what attracts certain people to these kinds of films, which is not me, but I understand that that's part of it. And so it is incredibly terrifying to hear someone scream for like help for that long. And I also can kind of understand what it's getting at. I can understand why people like Leatherface as a character because he's really like, first off, people are breaking into his house and he has a really fucked up family. Like, he had no better choices. Like, he is a neutral person completely. Why do people like this film? And especially the thing that I have to be left with after watching this film is that there are men out there who think it's not a political film. So to me, the most existentially terrifying thing is knowing that there are men out there who love that film and have not considered any of the morals to it. So that means they've watched this film with a woman probably screaming for her life
yeah.
for 20 minutes and do not view it in any way other than like, oh, it's just creepy, man. That is fucking terrifying. And it makes me sick to my goddamn stomach. And it's really turned me off to horror right now. And I don't love that because it is horror season. So I really need someone to come in and help me deal with these feelings, because I know that there are hardcore feminists out there who fucking love this film and love what it has to say. And they probably saw it at an earlier age where like the age of the film isn't as significant as it is now. Yeah, because I'm struggling with this and I would really like some context, because I obviously know that there are people who like it and like it for good reasons. And I need to know that. Please DM me.
I'll also say I was in a phase where I was watching South Park again a couple years ago.
Nice.
Yeah, I had a similar realization of like how I had watched it when I was much younger and I didn't actually understand, like I wasn't laughing at the right part of the joke, and how many like edgy boys and men watch South Park and are laughing at the wrong part of the joke.
Like how people didn't understand Colbert was satire for like the whole time.
Yeah. Yeah. Or like, you know, my family is pretty conservative and my dad used to watch Jon Stewart every night. Make it make sense. Yeah.
Make it make sense.
So, yeah, I don't know. I think, well, I guess there's also like the fear that you're reading some stuff wrong as well. But like it is genuinely terrifying to be like, no, the joke is that it's stupid to be a bigot. And they're like, the joke is the bigoted thing. And you're like, wait, no.
Yeah. And I obviously don't believe that like people reading art wrong is a reason that makes art bad.
But no, I don't think it makes the art bad, but it is
terrifying.
Yeah. Like, I don't think that means that South Park is bad because not everybody is laughing at the correct, like the part of the joke that's meant to be funny. Like, that's not, is that the creator's obligation to make sure that their art is understood by everyone? I don't think so.
No, but please help me understand this art better. Or you can just tell me the guy who made it is like a complete fuck off fillweed and that it actually is terrible. I would also love to hear that. That would also make me feel good. I just need help.
Help. Well, I'm at her.
Thanks for listening. If you'd like, you can follow us on the internet. You can follow me at Liz Loxley and at heyliz.com.
Oh, and a shout out. Heyliz.com got a makeover and it looks really nice. You can also follow me at xomiamore and xomia.com. And to leave you on some food for thought for the week, Twitter user Ant at AantCSZ. No, babe, your Hello Kitty impression is perfect. The normal women scare me. Stay spooky, y'all.
Bye. Bye.